When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi everyone, it's Imogen, the voice of Imogen from Stella Firma. Today I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Waters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, that's Woe, full stop, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts, or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, Alex here. I'd just like to take a moment to thank some of our patrons. Bruno Falcon, Brian Talby, Anastasia Keylor, William Dimmont, Abigail Lovett, Ariel Young, Jonathan and Gillian Kastner, Jared, Clark Levin, Jack, Cato and Jellybean, Rob Corr, Ollie, C. Jason, Grace Brandt, Dylan Herring, Rory A., Nicholas Schaefer, Harry Jones, Samantha Christine, AGVZ, Beery Goosey. Thank you all. We really appreciate your support. If you'd like to join them, go to www.patreon.com/rustyquill and take a look at our rewards.
Hello and welcome to the Stella Firma Season 1 Q&A. Ah, what a season, Ben. What a season. What are your thoughts?
What a season. It's seasoned.
Yep.
It was a lot of pepper, a nice bit of salt.
Cayenne.
A little bit of cayenne.
Cayenne?
Cayenne.
No, I colour my food with cayenne, which I believe is turquoise. I'm very ill a lot of the time.
Do you mean cyan?
I do.
Yes.
I do mean cyan.
This is a very, and that is how the season went.
And the season went. Somebody confidently saying a joke and then realising they were wrong. that's
nailed
pretty
it.
Much
absolutely.
Pretty much. So we've got a lot of questions, loads of questions. Oh, more questions than we could possibly handle. Except we will. We've got lots of questions here from the fans, from the fan base, from the screaming hordes that are outside the studio at all times. Very thick windows, can't hear them, but they are there, don't check. So let's push. Should we
take in turns?
Let's take it in turns.
Shall I take the first one?
Yeah, you take the first one, but I'll almost certainly interrupt you, just, you know.
It is you.
It is me.
Okay, so we've got the first one. It's from Lunatic Poet, who is asking, who's more chaotic, Ben or Tim? Well, since I asked the question, maybe you get the first answer.
I am.
I actually disagree.
Really?
Yes.
Really? I suppose I'm louder. And more aggressive.
I would never. Yes. Yeah, so I would think we are both chaotic in our own special ways.
Yeah.
I am more subversive.
Yes.
Tim is loud.
I think, and this isn't an insult, I think probably because you're slightly less experienced in improv than I am.
How dare you?
I will often try and make choices that are, I suppose you call them like actively supportive, which is fine. You often will make comments which are
negative. Shut everything down.
But the thing is, because I'm such a seasoned improviser, I just enjoy. It's fun to have that character because you can say no whilst also being a yes, as long as the other person sort of, you know.
I think they were talking about in the Discord. Apparently, my style is no so.
No so. Yeah, yeah, that's fine. Like a no, but is absolutely fine as long as you all agree. Because as we know, every single rule in improv is helpful right up until the point it strangles you to death.
It's like GCSE physics.
It's like GCSE physics. Learn things wrong so that you can learn
anything
other more complicated wrong things later.
Yeah.
Until eventually you kind of get near the truth, but still not really.
So, in summation, we are a chaotic force the like of which the world has never seen.
Exactly. Non-committal. Right, the next question is from E. Forney, especially for Ben.
That's me.
Since he's been on multiple Rusty Quill podcasts.
How does
doing Stella Firma, which is semi-improvised in quotes there, kind of a bit sarcastic, but okay, compared to Magnus Archives, mostly all scripted, and RQ Gaming, all/mostly improvised. There's a lot of sub-clauses in that question, Ben.
Well, I mean, let's actually, we can put some of these to bed. Stella Firma is, except for the intros and outros, entirely improvised.
Yes.
Which is semi-improvised. And then Magnus Archives is all scripted.
Yeah.
As far as I know, unless Johnny's riffing some fat beats of
riffing
words.
Some cosmic horror beats.
Yeah. And yeah, RQG. Gaming is, yeah. Oh, no, RQ Gaming. God, we have such a bad name. Alex is probably going to edit that out, but genuinely, Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast, terrible name. We didn't know what we were doing. It is all mostly improvised.
It'll be David editing this as well.
David, leave that in.
Leave that
Make
in.
It louder.
Make it louder.
Yeah, how does it differ? It differs in the way that you said. It's like Magnus Archives, I just turn up, I read the words, and then Alex will tell me to read the words differently until he's happy with the way that I've read the words, and then I go away. Mm. Resicore Gaming and Stella Firma are different because although they are improvised, they have very, very different objectives. Resicore Gaming is slower, less frantic, and much more focused on pushing the story forward and developing the characters, whereas Stella Firma is a kind of improvisation which is, you know, it's more sort of short form fundamentally, and at least compared to the 150 hours of...
Yes.
Raku.
Let's call it shorter form.
Sure, it's, yeah, it's
because it is long form improv, yeah. But it's shorter form narrative.
Yeah, and that's just really focused on the goofs and the energy. So it's actually, I guess, it's the energy levels.
Yeah,
Magnus is lowest energy because although we have fun, it's not about building yourself up. It's about doing what you need to do. RQ Gaming is medium energy because you have to keep it sustainable. Otherwise, we'd all just die. And Stella Firma is just 100%. Unlock the floodgates. Let's go.
Yeah,
until we stop.
Let the editor pick the bones out of that.
Yeah, exactly. You've heard the bloopers. You know what we're like.
You know what it's like. You know what? That is such a small fraction of the bloopers as well.
Gosh, that's just so many.
I mean, it's the bloopers that you'd want to hear because there's a lot of like, oh, I've done that right.
Yeah, it's the good ones. Right, so this is from Planets and Magic. Bonjour, planets.
Bonjour, planets.
I was wondering, what got you guys into improv? Any tips for those who are interested but without any experience? We chose this well. Tim, would you like to fill this? Oh, actually, no, I can sum this up. How did I get into improv? Tim got me into it.
I did.
There you go.
I did. Like getting someone into drugs. First taste was free. Then the next taste was also free because there's no money in any of it. I got into improv at university because I was shy and didn't know any. I was quite shy and retiring.
He went into university and came out a completely different, much louder person.
$9,000. Well spent. So I was sort of shy and didn't know people. And then someday I knew you did improv and invited me along. And I got into it and I was like, oh, cool. These are also shy idiots that are also on stage. So
one of whom was Alexander J. Newell.
One of these shy idiots was Alexander J.S. Newell. And my now other half was taught me improv and claims to have taught me everything I knew. I don't think that's true, but you know, she'll never hear this. She doesn't listen. No, she's now on the show, so she might. Okay, you know what? She's correct. So I got into it that way. Any tips for those who are interested but without any experience? It's going to sound very trite, but just start doing it. There's no entry requirement really, other than don't be an arse. And also, especially if you're in somewhere like London where there's lots of groups, don't be afraid to try a few, because I get the feeling people join an improv group and they're like, ah, this is everything that improv can be. And improv is very, very different from group to group. And you can get into it and think it's one thing. And you know, don't tell anyone, but you might join a group that turn out to be crap, because that does sometimes happen. You know, there are improv groups out there that are fine and you could probably do better in another one. So, you know, just shop around. Be a mercenary, have no friends or commitments, and wait until you hop on a gravy train of some kind. My answer really got away from me there. Okay, so in short, just do it, and if you don't like something, leave.
Yeah, the sunk cost fallacy is real.
Oh yeah, I've never got into it too badly myself, but I definitely know, like, when I was doing university improv, it felt like the extent of the universe, and then after it was like, oh, this was a tiny little corner.
It's the same thing as student theatre. It's no different. You do theatre when you're a student and you think it's the best thing ever. And then you look back on it when you've seen some real people do real theatre and you're like,
oh no,
my God, we were crap. It was an important and informative experience. But,
oh, sure.
But you ain't hit your zenith.
Exactly.
When you're doing, you know, bloody
Shakespeare in the
Stoppard or something. Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Shakespeare in the Park? Yeah, but lots of professionals do Shakespeare in the Park. So
no, only students. Okay. Next question from Miri. How much does David Seven / Trexel dynamic reflect your real life sibling dynamic? Do you really want to put David in a vacuum tube? Ben, what do you think?
No, not even slightly,
because yeah, that would be our, we would not be friends.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we're not as abusive to each other.
No.
You know, I don't try and gaslight Tim all the time, and Tim doesn't roll in and try and get me killed while being an alcoholic.
I rarely threaten you.
Rarely.
Sometimes, sure. Like when we, like normally when we're trying to complete a task, we're both tired and we've become weirdly aggressive. But yeah, we're pretty chill. We didn't get on. The only time we really didn't get on was when you were just about to go to university.
Yeah, I mean, it turns out when we were both awful teenagers,
yep.
You just
such an awful horrible person. But yeah, like since you went away and we, you know, was able to...
I came back from the university was.
You came back from the Sussex campus battle. Yeah, so no, in short, no.
From Bittercate, have you ever met anyone in a professional setting who knows you from Stella Firma?
No, I have people in a professional setting that now know I do Stella Firma. So like some people at my work listen. Like one of my bosses listens, and it's weird when he brings stuff up from the podcast. Like he'll just say, what did you mean by this? And I'll be like, well, the answer is nothing, but now let's have a meeting. So I've never encountered anyone who's like, hey, you sound like that guy from the podcast. So yeah, not currently not. Hopefully soon.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Yeah, me neither, because I've been in my job, I think, basically as long as I've been doing Rusty Quill. So, you know, I've not met anyone new who's been like, oh, you're that guy. Also, because, you know, we're not that famous.
No,
any stretch of the imagination.
We're pretty famous.
We're not at all. It's nice that you think we might be, but we're not. And that's why you have to tell more people about our podcast and make us extremely famous. Yeah.
Solid growth, sure. Not quite there. Not quite a Magnus level.
I want to find the McElroy brothers and stand on top of them.
Yeah, stand upon.
Being
the
like, you seem nice
McElroys.
Boys, but I'm better than you. Yeah, that's what I want to do.
Well, the thing is, they're three and we're a two.
So we're
streamlined,
more concentrated brothers.
Consummate brothers.
A thin soup of brothers. I'm still waiting for it because I work in the games industry, which has loads of nerds. Yeah. So I'm hoping at some point somebody's going to be like, "Oh, aren't you that villain from Magnus?" And I will be like,
"Yeah,
yes,
but not yet." From Caladet. Who would you fight on the show and why?
Who would I fight on the show?
Trexel, because he deserves it.
Yeah, Trexel, because he deserves it. Like, you know, the board, they'd arrange for you to be killed. Hartro, I think, would, I don't know, demote.
Stick her foot in your mouth.
Stick your foot in the mouth. I mean, maybe you're into that. I don't know.
But Hartro certainly is.
Yeah, Hartro certainly is. And I think Trexel secretly is. But yeah, Trexel's a monster, and he needs to be stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, fundamentally. With a synthetic backstory, but
I mean,
does
sure.
not excuse the things that he does.
Now, the thing is, I have had a fair bit of involvement in people who have gone through therapy and different things and dealing with disability and all those things. And one of the earliest lessons is, no matter how tragic and sad and understandable your backstory is, does not give you permission to be an ass. Like, you can be cross, you can be angry, but the minute you start, you know, endangering other people's lives, doesn't matter. You can go screw yourself. Is that okay? Screw yourself?
I think screw yourself is fine.
Yeah, okay. We're moving on to questions that are more about the production side. Ooh. Of, you know, the I think what people really want to know when they're listening to a good show is, what's the best boy? What does the gaffer do? And that's what these questions are.
I thought you were talking about which one of us was the best, because I am the best boy.
I am the best boy.
I'm the best boy.
I'm the best boy.
I'm pretty sure I'm the best boy.
How about this? I'm best boy, you're best guy.
I'll take it.
Okay. He's slightly older. Okay, so from Bittercape, what was the original pitch for Stella Firma?
What was the original pitch for Stella Firma?
I remember the original title.
What was that?
Well, okay, there was two
World Builders.
Yes, World Builders. So,
it's a terrible title. I'm glad we changed it.
Look, we were literally, so we were hiking.
We were walking to Lewis.
We're walking to Lewis across the South Downs.
Because
South
we are,
Downs way.
In fact, in an Enid Blyton novel.
Yes, we're marmalade sandwiches and...
We took our picnic and our lovely little dog, Spotty Boy.
And I had some scotched eggs. So we were wandering around the English countryside and thinking, oh, it'd be nice to do a podcast together.
Yeah.
We're white men.
Well, yes.
Let's do a podcast.
We have to do podcasts.
It's the law.
We're in our, you know, late 20s. It's basically...
Mid-20s, Ben.
Oh, man.
26.
29.
Ah, you'll
unfair.
Be dead soon.
I will be dead soon. Slogans run all up.
Yeah, we all got these crystals embedded in my hands.
Yeah, so I think... So I suggest it because I think I was thinking, you know, I'd like to hang out with my brother. I'm genuinely aware that that is why... The McElroy started the Adventure Zone because I want to hang out with their dad. And I was like, this is a great idea.
Yeah.
Just hang out with your family and record content.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, I'm a game designer and Tim's an improver. So why don't...
Improviser.
Improviser,
sorry. Don't call me an improver.
An improvisario.
Yeah, okay, I'll take it.
Improvatrix.
Improvatrix. I wear leather.
Squeak, squeak.
Squeak, squeak.
Squeak, squeak.
All that squeaking on the show. That's not Foley. That's me in my leather catsuit.
So we do those two things. And I was like, okay, well, why don't we do sort of fake world building, effectively doing stuff for tabletop RPGs. Mm. So people would say, oh, could you like design me a campaign setting?
Yeah.
And it was going to be a genuine, not stupid thing. We were actually just going to be like, oh, cool, this could be a really good thing to do. Mm. But then we started leaning on sort of the idea that Tim could because of his good improv background, could be getting suggestions out, which is like very, very creative and big. And then I could provide a sense of reality and actually how things fit together.
And the rules.
Yeah, exactly. So there you can actually see the start of the Trexel David Seven sort of relationship of me being the practical, logical one who brings down sort of what Tim is suggesting. Then I think we talk to Alex. Right, and then he asked for a rework to make it more genre fiction
and genre, and like I don't think he pushed the sci-fi side of it onto us. It was very much like, well, who would do this? Who would build worlds? Okay, it's Magrathir.
Yeah, Douglas Adams already done this idea. Let's nick it.
Yeah, and like there is definitely a Douglas Adamsy stuff in there, but I think there's a nice mix of like Douglas Adams. A lot of it was sort of kind of a bit Lovecrafty in the terms of like unknowable big forces that don't care about you but might still get you killed.
That's I mean Brazil.
Yeah, Brazil. Yeah, yes. Yeah, I
suppose Terry Gilliam's Brazil.
I suppose that's dystopian, but a lot of my sort of background in dystopia stuff, other than the classic sci-fi stuff, is either Brazil or I do like the Lovecraft settings, even though I am aware that Lovecraft is he's a big old racist.
Well, no, that's... Yeah, but also it's not dystopic. We're going to have to get into a big...
Is there a difference? I suppose it's not a dystopia. Well,
yeah, it doesn't describe a society. It describes our society, but then a big monster comes in through reality.
No, Innsmouth is a society.
It's not a dystopia.
I mean, it's not great.
Yeah, but it's not...
Hey, don't worry, everybody. Everything's going to be fine because we're going to worship our ancient fish god and become ancient fish people.
The Innsmouth lot are doing perfectly fine, and then this guy rocks up and goes, you're all weird and horrible. But they were just getting on with their
deal. They should do, you know, like Wicked, where it's like told from the
oh, from the fish
people. They should do like, you know... I don't know.
From the perspective of a deep one.
From the inn's mouth or something like that. Yeah. Fun pun. Yeah, real fun pun. Like a really good fun pun.
All right. And so we're going to try again. Then.
Yeah.
And from the Finn's mouth.
Ooh, they don't have fins.
Better. The deep ones might.
Ooh, true.
I don't know. True. This is completely off topic. Anyway, that was the original pitch for Stella Firma. It was basically a Lovecraft version of Wicked. Yeah, that's how it started.
Oh, I can do the songs. I want to do more songs.
No more Lovecraft fiction. It's overdone and boring, and I hate it.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
controversial opinion time. Sod it all. Yeah. It's so boring.
It's so boring.
Stop putting tentacles on things and pretending it's good horror. That can be edited out if you want, or be kept, because I'm spitting home truths. I'm spitting home opinions. This is very much my opinion, but, you know, every time there's a blooming Lovecraft Kickstarter, it's like, funded in 3 seconds. It's like, oh, no, more of it.
And also, it's very hard to do, because it's like, his cosmic unknowable horror, now let's try and represent it. It's like...
Well, now it's not... You don't have to do it well. It's just a bundle of, like, tropes that you slam together. And sorry for everyone who likes Lovecraft, but fundamentally, I hate you.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
That's not true. You can consume the media that you wish to, but my opinion is, no more Lovecraft, please. I'm so done.
People doing bad versions of a thing you like doesn't make the thing you like bad.
Don't even... Yes, that's true. I mean, I don't particularly like Lovecraft. Whatever.
I like his views.
Yeah. I'm really into, you know, I don't like his fiction, but his personal life, I'm just really supportive.
How everything is secretly about how he doesn't like the Chinese.
Yeah. Or anyone.
Or anyone.
At least he was an equal opportunity racist.
He was.
Anyway, Owen Shirrell asks, how did you first come up with the idea for the show?
Asked and answered.
Yes.
Moving on.
Wait, hang on. General question, basically asked in some form by lots of folks, how much of the show is improvised and how much is scripted, planned or known in advance?
Oh, that is a separate question, by the way.
Yes.
That's not right. So, Owen, apologies, your question has somewhat also already been answered. So it's not that we don't care or love you, and we still will, it's not your fault, we still love you. So the general question, how much of the show is improvised and how much is scripted, planned or known in advance? So the show, basically, from the door opening at the start to the door closing at the end, normally one take improvised. Like, we will edit out mistakes, but it's not like we stop and then go, right, how do we do this? How do we do that? It just plows through.
And you have actually heard in the bloopers our process for this, which is, we won't properly craft it, but we will sometimes stop short and go, was that good enough? Because we do have the luxury of being a recorded medium. So if we tell a joke that we think is not funny or a bit dodgy or didn't come across as we would like it, we can re-record it.
It's very nice because I do a lot of stage improv, and with staged improv you can get away with a lot in a live setting because everybody has sort of entered the pact of this is live. You might say something that isn't the best thing, but we all, everyone doesn't get up and go, I'm not sure about that. You know, it just, it's the pact, whereas as soon as you record it and you start editing things and you start adding things, you may as well go, yeah, I've done a line that I, you know, flubbed the word, came across in a way that I didn't intend it to. I think a lot of people have noted on the stuff, like, I think it happens a little bit less overall than it might come across in the bloopers, because obviously that's a collection of us doing things wrong. But we will do something and go, ah, you know what? Now I've said it out loud and it's outside my head. I feel like this might come across badly.
Yeah, well, it's the kind of thing where on stage you can't unsay things.
Yeah.
In recorded medium, you can absolutely unsay things.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah,
we take advantage of that.
And then release the things you unsaid in a special bloopers episode.
So that makes it clear that we don't support the things that were unsaid.
Very true. So yeah, so that's sort of all improvised. I will script the ends a little bit. So normally when there's like a little bit of David going back and forth between Imogen at the end, I'll script that, because that's sort of where the plot really happens, and a lot of the driving plot from week to week goes on and establishes a lot of that stuff. And you just, you know, you could improvise it, but it wouldn't be as good.
Well, also, if you've listened to a lot of things that do improvise, now, like, for example, something like Hello from the Magic Tavern, which is really good, and I listened to like 150 episodes before dropping off, because there's just, you know, I really enjoy it, but the plot is very loose.
Yes.
And as it came to more prominence, you started to see the cracks showing of like, oh, they're having to improvise this. And I think, you know, this hybrid version manages to keep it tight.
Yeah.
Without undermining the core improvisational aspect. But fundamentally what we've done is we do character development in improv.
Mm.
You know, all of the stuff about, I don't know, Drexel loving fish or David being slippery.
Yeah.
You know, that came up naturally in improv and we've just run with that as a thing. But we've kind of left the really, really big world building and plot stuff to scripting so that it can be tight and we can tell a directed story within that sort of siloed improv setting.
And absolutely, stuff that I've scripted has changed because of what we've improvised in the show. Like, that stuff just changes. Like, I have, and we have, sort of an idea of, like, we're going to go from, sort of from here to here in a season. But that stuff has changed quite substantially based off, you know, we get five episodes in and go, actually, this interesting thing is turning up. Let's lean into that.
Here's a tidbit. We know how the series ends. We know how the whole thing ends.
The whole
and we're not going to tell you.
No, because that would ruin
everything.
That would be bad. But, like, it may well change. Like, we sat down in a cafe, Gales in Brighton. Very nice.
We might as well be in the San Francisco of Brighton. We sat down with our coffees and our cinnamon buns and we talked about art.
And just sort of, you know, mapped it all out. And I like what we've got, but hey, if we think of a better idea between now and then, it will change.
Oh, actually, one thing as well, just to say, we do entirely re-record episodes.
Yes.
There have been episodes we've either done the whole Planet Improv and gone, that just in general wasn't very good.
Yeah.
Shall we take another swing of that using what we've learned?
Yeah.
or for example, and I think this is absolutely fine to say, when we had Simon in as Harry, we recorded an episode with Simon and then the editors, David specifically, kind of said, this is not coming across as you think it might be coming across, because we had one Scottish person and they were a complete idiot.
Yeah.
And that didn't translate very well. Now, Simon is Scottish.
Yeah.
So it was fine, but also from the external perspective of you guys, it might have looked like, okay,
this
is some kind of weird, stock, stupid jock character, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So we re-recorded it, and we ended up with a lot stronger episode.
And we did exactly the same thing with Hartra, not for the same reasons, but we just developed the character.
Yes.
You know, that is the thing with improv. Like, yes, we can talk about what the character is and what they're like, but we started doing it and realized, oh, you know what? These characters don't fit together. The relationships don't fit together in the way that we might hope. Let's have another go at it. We did, and we ended up with much better episodes.
Yeah, because it gave Jenny the opportunity effectively to practice as well.
Exactly.
Because by the time she was recording, we'd already done like five of them. So Trexel and David were pretty well established. And it's just like, now, hey, you, brand new, drop in and be as developed a character, which is just really difficult.
Yeah, it's mean. And we're mean people.
Yeah, it's not very fair. So the fact that we got an opportunity to re-record means that you now have the foot-based Hartro you know and love. That's all Jenny's fault, by the way.
It was entirely Jenny's fault. I get a lot of flack for that, but
it's
that's
Jenny's
all
fault.
Her.
But we just yes-anded the feat.
Which is the drawback of yes-and. You just have to go with it. So this is a question from CMP. Do Tim and Ben see the planets beforehand?
We do. And we judge them.
So I think there is definitely a line between seeing the planets beforehand and planning the planets beforehand, because we get a big list of suggestions. You, Ben. Ben, who I'm talking to.
Hello, it's me, Ben.
probably go, you go through it a little bit more than I do and just sort of like run off the top of your head, like, yeah, this one works, that one doesn't, you know, because sometimes the questions, especially early on when especially early on when people didn't really know the premise,
and we were asked, and to be honest, we can ask what the questions better.
Exactly,
like the next round of questioning will be much better,
but would include things like pop culture from the 20th century.
Yeah, you know, yeah, because there are certain certain unsaid rules that we have, yes, which we didn't tell people, so yeah, it is difficult. And there's also like planets which are really good ideas but are either overdeveloped to the, yeah, point where we can't really riff inside that idea. Like it's a bit like, oh, well, you make this and this and this and then that's kind of it. What we need is like this balance between, it's not so vague that it could be anything,
yeah,
but it's not so specific that it can only be one thing.
Yeah, and I think listening from episode to episode, you can see where we got that balance right and wrong.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
there's definitely ones that sort of flow better than others, but it's very difficult to tell.
Yeah.
But what we don't do is sit down with the chosen planet and go, right, what shall we do with this one? Like, I genuinely forget what the suggestion is multiple times in an episode because we looked at it once when we picked what ones we were going to do over a season, and then we hit go and you pick one and start talking. So, yeah, and that's intentional. I don't want for us to sit down with it and,
yeah, no, that's, think about, that's what illegal, we're
doing. It's improv and illegal, and the improv piece,
it's an improv crime.
And they'll impound something that's a combination of the word improv and the word impound.
This is becoming very much like that BoJack Horseman episode.
Consumé professionals.
Okay, moving swiftly on. So this is from Miss Claptrap. You've said this podcast has an overarching plot, so how do you make sure to hit the plot beats while improvising?
You keep the plot beats away from the improv.
Fundamentally. I mean, one thing as well is, what we do is we go through when we're planning the season, or at least we did for season one, and we're probably going to do for season two, is we have 25 episodes. So we kind of pick a thing that's going to happen on that episode, like, yeah, a one sentence, David does this, like it would be David starts rewriting the briefs,
yeah,
you know, that would have been a thing that got introduced in around about like episode 20.
That's our sort of A to B. By the time we get to the end, we need to introduce the idea, yeah, of this in some way.
So we have that guiding light, which, you know, we'll script around that to like really hammer that home. But when we're improvising, we improvise with that in our minds so that we can start to riff around that kind of stuff. You know, and we'll do that for the other seasons, I think, of like having like a one sentence, because pacing is really important. And if we didn't do that, then it would be like, we might have 10 episodes of nothing happening and then suddenly 5 episodes of everything happening and being, yeah, like, ah, you know.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's very succinct, Ben. Well done.
Thank you.
You'll be paid this week.
Good.
Owen Shirrell. Oh, getting another question in.
Well to be honest, Owen's last question was really a non-question.
A mulligan for Owen.
Yeah.
What was the ratio of scripted to planned content to improvised content in season one, and will that ratio change in season two? Like 5% to 95% scripted to improvised?
Yeah.
I think like it's very, very little, as we've talked about. And I think we will pretty much try and keep that in season two. I think since the show's inception, we've ended up with a lot more plot than we thought we might.
Yeah.
And that's still only around about 5%.
Yeah.
Any sort of gear change like that, regardless, yeah, of what format, is always going to be a bit tricky to do, and you're going to lose people.
Well, it's the kind of thing as well, like it's with any piece of media, you need to be really confident that your format is robust.
Yeah, exactly.
And you need to build it to be flexible enough. Like it's the kind of thing that, you know, I'm neither Johnny nor Alex, but it's fundamentally... I am Ben.
Okay. I thought you were the holy podcast trinity.
Yeah. No. But we all sound the same, so.
That's true.
Know. Like with Magnus, the fundamental format of Magnus, because so much has happened and developed, if Johnny had been less careful about how the format works, it could have broken. But he thought really carefully about it and has managed to keep it consistent. And like, but you need to put in that work at the start. You can't suddenly be like, oh, whoops,
yeah,
gotta change it. Which, you know, podcasts can survive that, and people can salvage it. But fundamentally, if you have your format in your head from the start and are confident in it and make it flexible enough to develop, then you're in a much better place than if you didn't.
And fingers crossed, we're going to do that for Stella Firma.
Wait for it to crash and burn in season two.
The Hindenburg of podcasts, I call it.
Okay, so Hobbs asks, was it planned from the beginning that David would hijack things and make good planets for a bit? That the final episode would be a trial and Hartrow's unusual style of management?
So let's take this question in stages. Was it planned from the beginning that David would hijack things and make good planets for a bit? Kind of, yes.
Yeah, not planned from the beginning.
But very early on,
yeah.
After an episode, you're like, where would be interesting and fun for these characters to develop? And I think it's Trexel knows what's going on but is incompetent. David doesn't know what's going on and is more competent. So if you think about the arrows of sort of like character development trajectory, those sort of point past each other and need to switch. And that's sort of the best way of doing it. So yeah, so in that sense, yes.
Yeah, vaguely. There was the kernel of an idea, but it wasn't as developed as it is.
The final episode being a trial. Yes, I think even in the first plot outlines, like again,
yeah,
I think
when
it might...
we went through, we decided how do we have a
consequence?
Yeah, how do we have consequences which don't ruin the format and just destroy the dynamic?
Exactly, because you know there was a lot of people who I think, especially before we were recommissioned, were like, oh, this will end with David getting recycled
or killing Drexel.
You know, and like both would be great ends if we were planning to do just one season, but we think there's a lot more fun to be had here, so let's not blow up the, you know, jump the block Death Star shark.
And the final thing, Hartra's unusual style of management. The feet was Jenny's. Jenny brought the feet in. We ran with the feet. We ran on our feet with the feet in our mouths.
In our mouths.
And that occurred.
Yep. So letters to Jennifer Halfeck, 123 Foot in Your Mouth Street, Brighton. Question from Noman. If Stella Firma hadn't been renewed, would episode 25 ended with David Seven getting recycled?
We're very good at preempting these questions.
I don't know.
It would have ended some way.
Yeah, I think maybe everybody would have died. I don't know. If we were doing like one season, maybe somebody goes, what does this button do?
Boom.
Someone explodes. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know.
But also we weren't really planning for it not to be renewed.
No, even in the early stages, call us mad optimists, but we were planning for multiple seasons. If you plan for just one season and you wrap it all up completely nicely, there's kind of nothing left to do in season two. And I think there are shows that have, you know, suffered from being like, well, you know what, we might not get renewed. And then they do, and they're like, oh, quickly write something new.
Yeah, and I think like the trial ending, we probably wouldn't have had the extra addendum scene with number one and number 48.
Yes.
But fundamentally, having that big trial and then having the status quo sort of reinserted it's like the Stargate way of writing, which is assume you're going to be cancelled, but leave it open for... So you don't want an obvious cliffhanger, which obviously now we're renewed, the scene between number one and number 48 is the obvious cliffhanger.
Yeah. Who are these people? Why?
But if it had just ended with Trexel, you know, having to swap out which bar he goes to... But it fundamentally means that the relationship has been re-established and it could go somewhere, but that mini arc is concluded and we probably could have left it at that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and you assume that, you know, they muddle along together.
Yeah.
But there will be unanswered questions around sort of, you know, like the whole thing around David's programming and all that sort of jazz, which again, you know, we have vague ideas about and we've got options, which is nice. I like writing it that way. I like to give a sort of options, and then as you hone in on a reality, it sort of becomes so.
Yeah. So this is from ERK. Did you always know who would play Trexel and who would play David Seven? And if not, how did you decide? No, we knew.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, because of Tim's improv experience, he needed to be the driving force.
Yeah. And also, I'm very selfish. So...
Yeah, I mean, trying to make him play David would be impossible. He wouldn't... It would be Drexel.
Drexel Seven. So yeah, it was sort of baked him from the start. From Book of Mac, how do you warm up to sustain Trexel and David's voice while not straining your own?
Of all the voices I do, David's is the easiest.
Yes, because it's yours but higher.
Well, no, it's me but more nasal. I talk up into my nose.
And I think I can... my accent isn't quite right, but in tone, I think I can pretty much match.
Well, no,
you.
We can both do David.
Yes.
And we can both do Trexel.
Well, I think my Trexel is better.
Well, I think my Trexel is better.
Well, I think my Trexel
is better. No, I think my Trexel is better.
Very confused.
At this point, who's talking? We'll never know.
Yeah, so I think you've got a bit of a better time of it than me in terms of sustaining it, because the sort of the Trexel growl, you can keep it in a register that doesn't hurt your throat. However, if you're not careful, I think there is a lot of bloopers where it's just me coughing.
Yeah.
But I don't walk away from a few episodes with like a completely raw throat. So sort of an addendum to this question, warming up the voice and stuff like that. It is very important, guys. Always warm up the voice. We do tongue twisters and...
But we more do it for pronunciation.
For diction and stuff like that. Because I'm a bit of a rubber mouthed fool.
As am I.
As are you. In fact, I actually just realised I said mouth with an F. Which I do a lot, because I'm dyslexic and I constantly get the F's and T-H's the wrong way. So,
I just have a very slight lisp.
Yeah. What's the only thing?
There is... Okay, so we've got one from Bittercape. For Tim, do you regret Trexel's voice? It's difficult to maintain.
I don't regret it. It is difficult to maintain at times.
And then what does it sound like when Tim tries to do the David voice and Brent tries to do the Trexel
voice? We're just getting ahead of ourselves.
Oh, that was from Hot Soup.
Hey,
sorry.
Hot Soup. Guess what?
Wait, we'll do a
your
little.
Your future crimes have already been handled.
Let's do a little scene.
Roleplay Holovision initiated.
Okay.
David.
Oh,
David.
Trexel.
I'm so drunk.
Trexel, it's 20 minutes left. We've got to get the brief done.
I've chopped off both of my legs.
Trexel.
I have forgotten who I am. Am I David Seven?
I'm in the vents now.
Am I? I get in the vents.
No,
I'm the vent boy. Get out of the vents. Get out of the vent. Get out of the vent.
Right.
I'm in the vents now. Look. Oh, so soft. So soft in the vents. I like the vents. I've padded them with feathers taken from a cosmic chicken. They're a thing. I've established cosmic chickens now because my tactic is to just take an animal and put cosmic or space in front of it. Now I'm just insulting Tim.
Your tricks are a lot popular than mine.
Roleplay Holovision terminated.
Yes, that is hate. It's not all that, but it's not all that.
Yeah. Who was speaking? Maybe it was just Tim and Ben. Maybe we rused you.
You've been rused. Cass, is there a particular bit, song or joke you are extra proud of or really enjoyed recording? What is your fave part of the season? Ben.
Oh, goodness.
There's a lot of bits, so it's a little...
Fave part of the season? I mean, I have to say that the Cardinal Fang episode...
Yes.
Cardinal Fang.
I don't know if it's my favourite, but it's definitely the most memorable. Yeah. And the fact that everyone picked up on Tim just refusing to stop saying Cardinal Fang. Yeah.
Cardinal Fang.
Which I did not remember was a Monty Python thing, because it came from a suggestion.
There
was
right.
a character called, you know, the Spanish Inquisition?
Yeah.
The one that isn't the one I think Terry Gilliam plays is called Cardinal Fang.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's what the suggestion came from. We did not know that. We took the suggestion on good faith.
Yeah, that's it. You've tricked us. Joke we're extra proud of. I guess I like the fact that I have established that David is very slimy.
Yes.
I think that's just a really fun thing and has developed the idea of David being able to slip and slide around the place.
Well, there's a very good bit where you just get onto the floor and slither away.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm pleased of that. And song or joke? Oh, this is it. It's me singing David's Fact Corner, even though it was, you know, it's a Patreon bonus. That was a sneak preview, guys. There's someone on Patreon. Join us for the full episode at some point.
It's a whole thing.
But mainly because it made Rach, my wife, completely lose it.
David's Fact Corner!
My favourite... Well, you know what? There's probably a joke that if I was reminded of it, I might like more, but I really enjoyed recording the bit where I kept on saying, that's my point. Ooh,
oh,
look,
yes.
A point. Oh, I need an egg. A point egg.
Oh, my God. Hard to record against.
I just enjoyed interrupting you with different ways of saying I've
so
made
many
point.
Blooming times.
Ooh, careful of that point. Who's got that point?
Yeah. This is for me. It's from Definite Human Jess. Were the scenes by guests in the finale, the testimonies and conversations between 1 and 48, improv or scripted?
A mixture.
Ooh.
So we did a load in the studio.
I have to say, I was very surprised when Sue Sims turned up.
I didn't know.
Didn't expect that at all.
That was a little Easter egg for everyone.
We recorded testimonies in the room.
Yeah.
I guess our silly voices were not convincing enough, so Alex decided they had to give other people things to say.
And I think John Henry did one as
John Henry
as well,
did do one?
Who I have a very, very vague connection to outside of...
Well, you can tell when that was recorded, because obviously he was in the studio recording the Magnus episode with one of the head of the Desolation Cult. Mm. So obviously Alex was like, oh, but while you're here, could you just give us some things about Trexel?
And my one interaction with John Henry outside this was a bit awkward, and I'm still embarrassed about it.
Oh, good.
So I met him in Edinburgh. I was much younger. He was in the Beta Males, who I idolised, and we knew Guy Kelly a little bit. We knew Richard Holmes a tiny little bit, and they were having a drink, and they're like, oh, come along. And then John Henry was just trying to have a nice conversation with his friends, and then we were like, hey, we're here. We're from University Student People Town, and we're very annoying. So I don't think he was best pleased to be
Every conversation when a excited university student turns up.
There's no pot of gold at the end of that rainbow.
No.
You know, I've after shows that have gone well, I'm not saying I am a celebrity, but after shows, when people come up and are like, I really enjoyed that thing, it's lovely. And then the people that really know what they're doing are like, I enjoyed that thing, thank you. And then they turn and walk away. Because what are we going to do? Where does the conversation go from here? I'm English. I'm bad at taking compliments at the best of times. There's no pot of gold. So, yes, I was on the wrong end of one of those interactions. Caladet, how much gets cut out of each episode? It varies.
I mean, that is an answer that only God and David know.
Exactly. I think not as much as you... I think, let's say a 20-minute episode... Sometimes we might record 25 minutes.
Yeah, it takes anything between 25 minutes and an hour.
Yeah, we have occasionally submitted 40 to 50 minutes of audio to be cut down. That's normally only gets that bad if we've, say, like, redone a big chunk or something
like that.
Yeah,
to be fair, that's usually about two episodes.
Exactly, like. Exactly. So, like, a lot less than you'd think, because a lot of what gets cut out is we flubbed a line, we take a 10-second section again. There's not a lot of going back and completely redoing scenes.
So, from Owen Sherrill.
Oh, back again, Owen. Felt jilted at the first, and now you're back for a third sup of the cup. Sup of the cup.
Horrible. Which, if any, of the planets created in Season 1 would you want to live on?
Good question.
I think I would want to live on Harry's planet, because I can read books,
yep.
Watch TV, keep up with the news.
What was Harry's planet, by the way?
Oh, basically the living room.
Oh, that was
the planet-sized living room. I can hang out with friends.
When we were really half-arsing it towards the end.
And socialise with friends. You know, yeah. Just pleasant.
And then put it on your CV.
Either that or the Cardinal Fang planet, which David developed. Which, yes, is kind of a bit of a lie, because really, Jenny developed that one because... Oh, that's one thing to say as well. The planets that David rewrote,
yes,
were not written by us.
No.
Fundamentally, we told Jenny, just tell us something that is proper.
Yeah.
So I didn't have anything to do with the planets that David created. That was all Jenny just improvising at us, and then us being like, yes, of course, that's what happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's just a lovely garden with a nice building and a good armchair.
I think basically all of the quote-unquote David-designed planets are pretty nice. But I think, yeah, the garden... Basically, it's a Garden of Eden-style thing.
Oh, or the one with the robot golden robot gondoliers.
Da-da-da. Do-da-do. Golden robot gondoliers. Here's you. Those ones. So this next one is from Miss Claptrap. How much of the world is the result of riffing off each other? Trexel's thing about fish, clone slurry, David's onesie, etc.
Most of it?
Or pretty much all of it. Like, obviously we have the suggestion and that forms the basis.
High-level bullet points of, like, Stella Firma, big company, makes planets, is rubbish.
Yeah.
Board is scary. Kind of it?
Yeah. Well, I think the fact that we can get to the end of an episode and think, actually, maybe we need to have another go at that, is kind of indicative of the fact that we don't have much going in. You know, we try.
Well, we completely changed the tenor of, in the last episode when we had the corridor scene, we recorded a version of the corridor scene where there were people around and then decided, yes, actually, no.
Especially as we're on the lower decks.
Yeah, so we riffed that because we said, oh, we wanted Chuck to try and talk to people and then ignore him, but then we said, actually, let's redo this and just riff a different version. So, like, the version of Stella Firma,
I just realised I misunderstood the question. It's about the world building, as in the,
yes,
show world,
not
building,
the planet,
not the planet.
Because that's, I would hope people would have got the fact that the planet is riffing.
So. But what Ben said in terms of, we got a few key. I really had a real gear shift, record scratch in my brain
said,
as I realised I'd got the question wrong. But we got broad points about the world. But the fish thing, the clone sorry thing, the onesie thing, all just, we said a thing and was like, oh, well, we've said that now, and we like it.
Yeah.
We'll keep it.
So this is from AGVZ, Agvers. Hello, Agvers. How sentient is Imogen? Is her personality programmed, or does she have something like free will? At first, I thought she was a standard corporate AI, but then she says things like, watch it, Buster.
Watch it, Buster.
Happily joins in the chant of Cardinal Fang.
Cardinal Fang.
I'm curious about her. You'll have to continue to be curious, won't you?
Because answering this question is very heavily what the plot will be.
We're going to get the plot spritzer and spritz you in the plot face.
Yep.
Stop. No.
Watch it, Buster.
E. Forney, are we going to see more of Harry? I believe so.
If Simon ever wants to talk to us again.
I mean, sure, he already had to do two episodes with us and he looked very bored by the end. No, that's untrue. So Simon, who plays Harry, is sort of my sort of main improv husband. In that I am in another group as well where it's sort of a bit bigger and there's more people, but I do sort of probably the most shows with Simon. We do improvised musicals at Edinburgh under the name Do The Thing. do come along.
Always be hustling.
Always be hustling. I'm sold out last year and the year before, so suck on that.
Brighton Fringe, by the way, not Brighton Edinburgh Fringe. He doesn't go to the proper Fringe.
Well, the thing is...
doesn't go to the soul-sucking Fringe.
The Edinburgh Fringe is a long way away. You lose money, and it's, for the performers, sometimes horrible. Whereas the Brighton Fringe is 8 seconds from my door.
fine.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's very nice. I'm in many ways, I prefer it. But then I'm sure if I lived in, you know, Sheffield and it was really difficult to get down Brighton and I had to pay for accommodation, I'd probably feel a little bit different.
Molly, does David Seven have a mullet? I feel like he has a mullet. Well. If you feel like he has a mullet, he has a mullet. If you feel like he doesn't, then he doesn't.
What do you feel the poem is saying in your opinion?
Well, no, but basically, I mean, fundamentally, all of the different versions of David Seven, Trexel, Hartrow, even Imogen, are great. And I personally have absolutely no
confection.
I like sweeties.
I love it.
I personally have absolutely no conception of what David Seven looks like, apart from the things I've said, like he has a onesie.
Yeah. And that's intentional.
Yeah.
You know, it's much more fun to have the fan community do the art and be like, I like this, I like that, rather than be like, no, this is how they look. Do art of this person.
Yeah. Like I really like the ones like the Raven does where he looks like a little sad Ernie. It's really fun.
I like,
but also all the other ones where he's got little hooves and like, it doesn't matter.
And it's very unclear as to whether the hooves are actual things that David has or if it's just... because things, I often say that people have hooves in real life. They don't, but I still say
that's the danger of saying things in an improv context.
Yeah.
Did you mean it literally?
Who knows?
Who knows? Hoove knows.
Hoove knows.
How about yourself? Like,
Again, I don't really... like, for example, I really enjoyed one where I ended up being sort of like a grey-skinned, horned sort of troll thing.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought, oh, yeah, I hadn't really thought of this.
Or the one that, like, Jackalope Hearts does, where you basically look like Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah. Hair all over the place, loud jacket, big square glasses. Yeah, a lot of fun. Moss, again, asks, is the security department just plain told to ignore the security alerts from Trexel? Well. Plot.
Mm.
So I think I'm happy enough to establish at this point that there is a certain amount of, oh, they've come from Trexel's office. Well, let's not spend too much time and resources.
Also, show you how the sausage is made. That was a fun idea which got developed into more than it was intended to be. So,
and the wonderful thing about improv plot is I might make it a big important thing.
Yeah.
Or I might not.
We'll see where it goes.
Who knows?
You know, we don't know.
We don't know. The important thing is we don't know.
Yeah.
Much like the team behind Lost, and that worked out fine.
Oh, good. Yay. Hey, look, we actually know how our series ends.
That's very true.
Fatal Drum asks, why does security never come when alerted?
Look, we already told you.
Like these questions have been ordered in a way to catch us out.
That is why, Fatal Drum. Academic Master 07. If Trexel is only working with the seventh iteration of the David clones, has Trexel only been working in Planet Design for 3 months now? Or what did he do before having David around to help and then get killed? So big assumption that clones are just called David. I might have been with Terence's 1 through 109, Gary's 6 through 84. You know.
So fundamentally, this is a problem that we realised and went, hang on a minute, this doesn't match up.
Yeah.
So then we came up with the excuse that maybe there's been Eileen 1 through 3052.
So I sort of retconned this and it's now being built into certain things that the name is basically like the brand.
Yeah.
You know, the chemical,
the David
mix.
Line, Eileen line.
Exactly.
Terence line.
It's like they're all part of the same genus, but they're slightly different variations on species.
Yeah. Fundamentally, we realised that this was a problem, I think, about 15 episodes in.
Yeah.
When we sort of sat down and went, ooh, hang on a minute.
Yeah,
so this is the reason we've come up with. Again, improv is great because you can just cover your ass whenever you want and shout improv.
The great thing is that is probably a better workaround ending than I probably would have come up on my own, which is, again, the fun thing about it. You end up with, it's easier to do and the ideas are better. Why write anything down in advance, idiots? That's
never plan.
That's a call out to all script writers.
Yeah. Looking at you, Johnny.
Look at you. Yeah, it's clearly not worked for him, idiot.
Magnus is rubbish.
Terrible.
It's going to fail. Raven, so when is Trexel releasing his new album? Particularly looking forward to Laser Friend.
I want to produce a proper album of songs.
Don't encourage
it
him.
It is my goal, but no one is supporting me.
Yeah, well, Bradley Raven is supporting you.
I really, 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 really want to do more fleshed out instruments. However, I think everyone who's not me and maybe a few of the fans are looking at that, and the work to get out of it ratio is...
Albums are hard to record.
I mean, we've got a composer who did the theme tune.
Yeah.
And you know what? David's a man of many talents. I'm sure he can...
Do you know why the songs are so short that we get from him? It's because it's hard and expensive.
It's hard and expensive. Now, so I obviously, as I mentioned, I do improvise musicals, and a lot of the work we do there is trying to improvise something that actually sounds relatively polished by the time it comes out of your face. But we do that with a very experienced live musician who is not particularly interested in this stage and coming into a hot studio and working for hours and hours and hours to make an improvised song work in a recorded fashion. So I'm working on it, guys, but no one likes me.
just keep shouting at Anil and maybe it'll pop up as something.
Come on! Oh, dear. Like, we do a lot of rehearsals where we get to the end of it and I heavily lobby for us to sit down and properly, like, flesh out a song, and but no one's interested. Apart from me and Raven. Bitter Cape for Tim. So this is a question for Tim. Hi, Tim. What is Trexel's relationship with the fish? And is it the same fish each episode? What does it smell like? In answer to the first question, I'll tell you when you're older. the second part, it is the same fish. Weirdly for Trexel's personality, he is very traditional and monogamous. He doesn't care for poly fish relationships. He's a real fundamentalist about this, apparently. Going to the end of this sentence, he's like...
By the way, we are recording this on Brighton Pride Day as well.
Oh, yeah, we're very inclusive. Why do you think we've sequestered ourselves away in a hot studio? Because we hate Pride.
No, this isn't going in. Too many people. Too many people, and I hate it.
No, I've marched in the Pride Parade with a charity. I felt like a bit of a fraud because I am basically
not any of those things.
Cis and het as it gets. Unfortunately, it's fine. But we marched as part of a suicide prevention charity, and I really like the Pride Parade if I'm in the parade, and therefore it's regulated how many people are around me. In the crowd, I am always an inch and a half away from screaming and hitting someone because it's so busy.
Yeah,
and so
too many people,
trappy.
Many social anxiety, yeah. And also fundamentally, it's not for me.
I'm have every other day.
I'm a straight guy. It's fine.
So yeah. So in short, it smells bad.
Not Pride, the fish.
Well, you know what? In Brighton on
Actually,
a hot day,
no, yeah,
it
no,
does smell
Pride
bad.
Pride is going to smell pretty bad.
Because there's beer and piss everywhere.
And sweat. Just people can be very sweaty.
And do you know what? Sweat contains a lot of uric acid, Ben, so...
Okay, sweat doesn't smell like piss, though.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
It smells like piss. It's got
uric
acid.
My armpits do not smell like urine.
David, get rid of all of it.
A small town AI asks to dig us out of this horrible hole we've dug ourselves into. The things we do for all of you. Do the ID numbers have any significance? Does it mean anything that Trexel's ID number is two numbers shorter than Hartrose and David's?
Are they?
These will be in the show notes.
Yeah, let's quickly navigate to the show notes live. Because I feel like I've done something about this. Clever.
Okay, fundamentally, it sounds like Tim made a mistake and now we're going to come up with a reason why this is fine.
Let's have a quick look.
Improv! Improv!
Improv.
Improv dives out of a window.
So yes, there is absolutely a reason for this that I thought about when I wrote these things down. So let's quickly navigate to
a Hartrose episode.
So we've got Hartro is sort of like, was it 6327782, Trexel is 362884, and David. So basically, my conception of it is the IDs are sort of, to a certain extent, first come, first serve, and also linked to the sort of hierarchical, what would the word be, like lineage-based
system.
So
what you're fundamentally saying is that the Geissman family were the 362,884th 884th family to be part of, or like bloodline or gene.
Around that, or like there's a certain amount of handing down of numbers, you know, like a sports jersey.
Right, and then if you mix lineage, you're given a new number.
So it's not completely, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There is a certain amount of hierarchical... You know, the shorter your number, the more old and respected your family is. Mm-hmm. So a Hartro has a higher number, but it's much lower than David's because David is at that end of things where it's like, it's just the next one in the line. You know, that's just... So, you know, at the moment of his birth, his number might well actually be the highest there is, because he is the lowest of the low.
Oh, interesting. So that means there has, as of, you know, a couple of weeks ago in the show's timeline, 95,847,335 people. No lineages, which work for Stella Firma Limited.
Exactly. So sometimes that's individual people that just have the number once. Other times it's a reused number because it's like a respected range of numbers. So that's, you know what, that's probably more complicated than it needed to be, but I do think about these things probably more than I need to.
Little suggestion for next time. Mm? Clones should have dash their number.
Oh, like a little
versioning thing.
Yeah.
There you go.
Digipup. Does David actually have hooves?
Who knows?
Can say?
If he has hooves for you,
He's
just a hoofy boy.
Yeah.
If there's some nice toesies, if you believe in toes,
Toes
away. How many? 15 toes? 3 toes?
Maybe you're a two-toed ungulate.
Yes.
Could be.
That's basically hooves. That's just flesh hooves.
Hey,
make a decision.
Ben, after what we said earlier, let's not get very demonstrative and specific about what we believe does and does not constitute a hoof.
Cass and Jared. Is all the food made out of slurry? What are the drinks at the Cosmic Lounge made out of? Or how are clones made?
Slurry. So I think there is a certain amount of... there's a big tank of genetic material that is changed into different things, which, to be honest, is probably not too far away from how things will go in the future. You'll have a medium, and then you'll do certain things to it and flavour it.
It's a classic sci-fi trope. I think that's how the Star Trek stuff works.
Yeah, you know, it's to a certain extent, that's how everything works, in that everything is made of atoms, and then you do different arrangements of it. And
Everything's just atoms. Oh, yeah, get him over here.
Get him over here with his science saying things are made of atoms, like some sort of PhD Poindexter. basically the care and attention and quality of the slurry is sort of different. So the slurry that the clones get is this sort of, you know, edible but vinegary hot mess.
Tastes like hot socks,
tastes
I think.
Tastes like hot socks. And then the ones that consultants get is better, and line managers is better, and, you know, the drinks at the Cosmic Lounge, probably the more expensive they are, the better they are. But yeah, it's all made out of a medium, which is slurry. As are the clones. So at certain points, you're probably drinking reconstituted clone.
Oh, also, absolutely. Imagine the grimmest possible outcome.
Yeah.
And yes, that.
Yeah, that one. Mars. Whose idea was the foot thing? Why are the review episodes so kinky? Jennifer Halfeck.
Kinky Halfeck. Oh, Kinky Halfeck.
Halfeck the Kinkmeister. Yeah. So yes, sure. Did we run with it? Okay. Is she responsible ultimately? Yes, she is. Letters to her. And a follow-up question from Mars. Has Trexel been the only design to have clones from the David line, or is there another design consultant out there making planets with David 2 or something? So I think given the speed that he's got through them, potentially he does get through big chunks of a line before anyone else needs a new one. But that's not canon. That's, you know, maybe...
As yet to be decided, basically.
AYTBC. Did I get that right?
You did?
Yeah.
I just got confused.
Yeah, AYTBC.
AYTBC. The old, well-known acronym. Miss Claptrap asks, based on the finale, is Stella Firma Limited actually financially sound?
I don't know. And final question, E4ny, Cardinal Fang.
Cardinal Fang. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the season. Ben, we have to finish now.
It's very hot. We've been going for quite a while.
Continue without me. I'm fine over here.
Okay. So I hope you've enjoyed this this season one Q&A of Stella Firma with Tim Bent. A lot of fun. So hopefully we'll be doing more of these in the future. Hopefully one at the end of season two. But who knows? There might be some Patreon exclusive Q&As as well. So it's a big thank you from Tim Meredith.
And a small thank you from Ben Meredith. Really, I don't appreciate this much.
He doesn't like you all. Lovely. Thank you.
Bye.
Hi, everyone. It's Imogen, the voice of Imogen from Stella Firma. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Waters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, that's Woe, full stop, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts, or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.